The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. The Pharisees went out and took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. When Jesus realized this, he withdrew from that place. Many people followed him, and he cured them all. But he warned them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what had been spoken through Isaiah the prophet. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight. He shall place my spirit upon him. He will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not contend or cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, a smoldering wick he will not quench, until he brings justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope. The Gospel of the Lord. Throughout this week, we have been pondering what Jesus proclaimed to us on Sunday, that it's essential for us to take a soil sample of our mind, our heart, our soul, to see if we're good and fruitful soil, or if we're one of the three types of infertile soil, hardened, rocky, or thorny, that's going to amount to nothing in life. Today we see a huge contrast between the hardened soil of the scribes and the Pharisees and the rich, fruitful soil that Jesus is and wants us to have. Yesterday you remember the gospel because you're a good Catholic and you received it on good soil, so it's already borne some of the 30, 60, or 100-fold fruit. You can all tell me right off the bat what it was. Right? Jesus is with his disciples and they're walking through a field on the Sabbath and they're starving. And so they pick some of the grains, which was totally according to the Mosaic law, that there were pathways, along the pathways people could actually pick if they were hungry. But the Pharisees were outraged because in order to actually eat what you pick, you got to work. You got to just do this. And that was against their own interpretation of the Mosaic law. So they were outraged. They would rather have the disciples starve over the course of the day than be fed. And immediately thereafter, which we're not covering at this cycle of St. Matthew, we'll cover it in St. Mark, Jesus, right after that, enters into a synagogue. There's a man with a withered hand, but it's still on the Sabbath. And so Jesus heals him of his injury. And everybody's outraged. All these Pharisees are outraged. And Jesus just says, which one of you wouldn't save your animal if your animal were in a ditch in the Sabbath? And yet here we've got a child of Abraham and you're not even going to lift a finger to help him. They cared more about their animals than they did about other human beings. And because Jesus did those two things, we begin today's gospel. The Pharisees went out and took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. No matter what Jesus said, no matter how he backed it up with his deeds, they absolutely weren't going to accept him. And they were going to, in total violation of the Mosaic law, break the fifth commandment and conspire to murder him. Breaking the eighth commandment of bearing false witness along the way. Hardened soil. It's about them that the prophet Micah was speaking in today's first reading. Woe to those who plan iniquity and work out evil on their couches. They lie down thinking and dreaming about the evil they will do. And yet, these Pharisees had the greatest reputation of all for being religious. Whereas a typical Jew would fast one day a year on the Day of Atonement, they would fast twice a week. Whereas the typical Jew would pray once a day, they were praying three times a day at least. Whereas the typical Jew only had to tithe, give 10% of a few explicit things in the Mosaic Law, they were giving 10% off on everything they had. Many of the Pharisees were also scribes, scholars of the law. They knew every little dot of that law, at least the letter of it. But they totally missed the spirit. What's the spirit? That God actually loves us, that he cares for us, that if we're hungry, he wants us to be fed, that if we're injured, He wants us to be healed, that He wants us to learn how to receive that love and to live in that love. And they didn't grasp that in the least. And when Jesus was coming and showing that gospel, they wanted to extinguish it because, frankly, it didn't fit according to their previous conceptions. Even though they were on the outside as religious as you could be, they couldn't be changed, they couldn't be moved. They were that hardened soil. The seed of the Word of God would just bounce off of them. It wasn't able to bear even a little fruit. And the devil would come and take away that seed. In contrast, what does Jesus do? Jesus shows us what good soil really looks like. According to human logic, Jesus had all the power, if He wanted, to prevent them from doing justice. He had His own divine intel. He knew they were coming after Him. So according to worldly logic, even there are some strains of just war theory that were posited here in the United States in order to try to say, if you knew or even suspected or even were worried that the other side would come after you first, you have a chance to go after them first and put them out of business. It's no longer an imminent threat that was needed, but we can take preventive action, they say, and really injure people before we even have evidence of a real threat. Jesus could have easily done that and eliminated those who were plotting to kill Him. That isn't what He did. What did He do? Got a lot to learn from what He did. When Jesus realized this, St. Matthew says, He withdrew from that place. He withdrew not because He was cowardly running away. He withdrew so that He could continue His work. And as He withdrew, St. Matthew says, many people followed Him, and He cured them all. Jesus wanted to continue expressing that love of God in deeds for His people. He warned them not to make Him known, because He knew people were misinterpreting what it meant, and so that He could continue to lay the groundwork and plant the seeds in those who had good soil of the kingdom. He told them not to make Him known. And all of this, St. Matthew says, was to fulfill what had been spoken through Isaiah the prophet. You know, there were three times God speaks in the gospel. First time is at Jesus' baptism. Behold, my Son, with whom I am well pleased. At the Transfiguration, this is my Son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to Him. At the Last Supper, when Jesus says, Father, glorify Your name with the glory it had before the foundation of the world. God the Father spoke and said, I have glorified it and I will glorify it again. But here St. Matthew makes God the Father speak in a sense a fourth time by quoting the prophet Isaiah. Behold, my pais is the Greek. I'll define it in a second. Whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight. That word pais means two things. It means servant, but not a servant like a doulos, which is a real slave, but a servant who is a son, someone who is obedient son. It's a child. We used to have that sort of better translation in Old English, if you would say, come here, my boy. Or the way you'd refer to waiters in French, garçon, which is the same word in a sense for son. Come. Come. Servant and son. Someone who is obedient. Behold my pais, my filial servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom I delight. I shall place my spirit upon him and he will proclaim justice to the Gentile. Then he starts to describe his attributes. These are the same attributes Jesus was speaking about earlier this week, that if we're going to have good soil, we have to learn Him who is meek and humble of heart. Because if we don't have meekness or humility, we won't be able to allow God to do His work in us. If we're not meek, we're constantly going to be fighting back rather than like someone trained in the martial arts, deflecting what people are doing. If we're not humble, we don't even think we need it. So God, through Isaiah, says about Jesus, He will not fight or cry out, nor will anyone hear His voice in the streets. He's not going to be crying out in the streets, help me! Can't you see what these losers are doing? He's not going to do that. A bruised reed he will not break. Smoldering wick he will not quench until he brings justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope. What's the Lord's way? What's the way of good soil? What's the Christian way? It's his way of meekness. The Lord's going to save us not through a display of power as the world believes power is to be exercised, with tanks and weapons and worldly force, but really by this force of a love that loves so much that it's willing to die even to save the lives of the murderers. That's what Jesus was doing. And that's what he wants us to do. Because that's what happens when we have good soil. That even through our suffering and death, even through being persecuted, we can bring many more people to the faith than we would be able to if we were proclaiming it live. That's why the church grew exponentially during the age of the martyrs. This is a crucial tie-in to what we're going to be hearing in the gospel tomorrow, when Jesus describes that he wants us to be his seeds. He's planted his seed within us and it's grown. And just like what happens in a tree eventually produces fruit, and those fruit have new seeds in them that can be planted and continue further grow. He wants us, the children of the kingdom, to be able to be inseminated by him in the middle of the world. But it starts as little mustard seeds. It starts as leaven, and it's supposed to grow. And it grows, fertilized by the blood and the sweat and the hardship of Christians. That's something that we need to learn again, which is one of the reasons why the church is allowed to contract after it's expanded, so that we don't forget those lessons. But it's in that, if we're going to truly live that lesson of the mustard seed and become the soil, the seed planted in the soil of the world, we need to grasp how with Jesus, not to contend, not to break bruised reeds, not to cry out, not to quench smoldering wicks, but revivify it, blow it so that it lights on fire again. The one who shows us how to do this best is, of course, the greatest disciple who ever lived, the Blessed Virgin Mary, whom we remember in a special way every Saturday. We're celebrating today the votive mass of the Blessed Virgin Mary, handmaid of the Lord. She was one when she saw her fellow Nazarenes conspiring to murder her son Jesus by throwing him off a cliff. She didn't raise up her voice. She was one who along the way of the cross didn't exclaim, "Woe is me." She was one who wasn't drawing attention to herself even under the cross. When she saw the child whom she used to bathe naked once more and bathed in blood. But she was there, meek and humble, always until the end. The only time she cried out is when St. Luke says in the scene of the visitation, she exclaimed, "My soul magnifies the Lord, my spirit rejoices in God my Savior." She shows us how to live this gospel of loving service. It's about her too that God the Father could say in the words of Isaiah, "Behold my servant whom I've chosen, my beloved in whom I delight. I shall place my spirit to overshadow her so that she might proclaim the right way, she might proclaim justice to all the nations." All the nations in every generation who calls her blessed. She who wants to mother us so that one day these words of Isaiah can likewise be predicated of us. "Behold my son, my daughter, my servant, whom I have chosen, in whom I delight, on whom I have sent my spirit." Let's ask through Our Lady's intercession for the good soil, that these words may be fulfilled in us through our faith in them. Praise be Jesus Christ.